Christ our Passover has been sacrificed for us, therefore let us keep the feast. And this feast is what the Holy Mass is. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Every Knee Shall Bow, your weekly Catholic podcast on evangelization and discipleship. My name is Mike Gormley, and I am joined today by Dave Wildlifting Van Vickel. How you doing, Dave?
Wildlifting?
Lifting like a madman Van Vickel. How you doing?
Okay. I'm good, and I have plans to do just what you just described. So,
What is lifting weights like a madman? What does that mean? Come on, let's hear it. Expose your heart to the world.
I mean, like, you know, like I would say, like, you know, sometimes you're like real cautious, especially now. I'm starting to find that I'll, you know, very easily throw my back out and stuff like that. And then sometimes you just gotta cry havoc and let slip the hogs of war, my friend. That's what you gotta do. Today's leg day, so it's okay. It's like one of those weird relationships where I love it so much, but I also just hate, like, I'm afraid of it. It's like, I'm afraid of it.
You sound like Gollum with the one ring.
That leg day is the one ring. Yes, it is the one ring.
I remember in the Batman Lego movie, they have like the Batman theme song, and he's like, who never skips leg day?
Yeah.
Batman.
Yeah. Yeah. See, people who don't, that's like the biggest joke in weightlifting is leg day, right? Like skipping leg day. And
legs really are miserable doing legs.
People think it's a joke, but like there are times where I've gone, like where in the middle of the night, I've gone to the bathroom and been like, okay, I'm just going to sit here for a while before I get up. Like it's that.
My favorite, I saw these, there are memes you can find on Google, but you type in guy skips leg day or something like that. And you just see these like jacked biceps, broad shoulders, tight abs, chicken legs.
Do you remember, I used to always joke with Matt Schneer about that. Do you remember how that dude, he looked like a Ninja Turtle. He was so strong. Do you remember?
Yeah, he was a beast in college.
Oh my gosh.
And he was terrifying. At least it could be.
Hey, what do you have coming up? It's Lent.
Oh man. Yeah. Lent. So, you know, I have a lot of the standard parish missions. It's less That Man As You style men's conferences. We got a big one coming up in the Grand Rapids area called the CAFA Men's Conference.
Cool.
It's actually awesome. They've been doing it for over a decade. I think they've been doing it for like 15, 20 years, something like that. It's one of the few Catholic men's conferences that are done really, really well because they have people invested. They got like hierarchy. It might even be a nonprofit now. Like women's conferences have been doing it this way for 120 years in America. Men's conferences are like, look, we'll get some coffee. I'll order some Dunkin' Donuts.
Right,
and we'll be fine. And this is like, we're a well-oiled machine over on the women's side. So this is one of those conferences that is definitely a well-oiled machine. So I'm super excited about that. And then I'm doing parish missions up in Connecticut, some other places. So what about you?
Yeah, I have a bunch. I'm actually maybe overbooked a little bit. So I have a bunch of local stuff right now that's coming up. And I'm thinking like maybe at the end of Lent to start branching back into non-local stuff. So I'm just trying to kind of figure out what God has in store with the future. But yeah, I have tons of parish missions. And I'll tell you what, I'm supposed to any day now get the dates for Warrior Week 2024, baby. And that will be my entire focus. I've talked to you about this. I mean, how annoyed are you with Warrior Week? Because this has been like, we're talking about 8 years now of me desperately wanting to put this on.
Well, you know, I'm not, so to answer your question, not at all annoyed. Please keep telling me. I laugh every time I hear about it. But number two, I want to do that retreat that me, you, and J.D. Flynn talked about years ago, the Passion of the Church Worker retreat.
Yeah,
we should. I think that would be so awesome.
We should.
And really, all I want to do is make a ton of money off the pain and suffering of church employees. So I figure, you know, it's not the new evangelization unless someone is making money off of the new evangelization. And I just asked, why not me? Why not me?
I don't approve this message. No, isn't it funny now that Paul was a tent maker and now you're in roofing?
Yeah, it's a one-to-one correlation. Yeah, I attended my first roofing conference, GAF sponsored, which is a roofing manufacturer.
Oh my gosh, I can't believe you just said that.
It was, yeah, it's not GAF, it's GAF, how dare you. And so I went and I walked in there and I started taking photos because I'm doing the marketing and stuff for this company for Petrus Roofing and Solar. So I started taking photos and stuff, and they had a big GAF energy thing there because they make these energy shingles that can be installed by roofers. They're not like crazy specialty projects, but it generates electricity. So I started talking to the guy and I look off to the side and there's a dude with his phone, and I can tell he's staring at my name tag. And he's on his phone and he's like looking up at, so I walk over to him. I walk up to him and I go, hi, how you? And he's a GAF employee.
Yeah.
I was like, hi, how you doing? My name is Mike Gormley. And he looks, he goes, yeah, you're the Catholic speaker guy, Gomer. Okay, yeah. So we start talking. He's like, I do RCIA at St. Edward's. I do, starts going through. He's a sidewalk counselor down, or a St. Paul street evangelization guy down at the ballpark through Annunciation Catholic Parish. Oh, he did like awesome. He just starts going through all this stuff. So then he joins our table because our whole roofing company, Petrus, and Petrus meaning Peter, right? We're all ordinary guys. Every single one of us, one of them's going to be a deacon, all this stuff. And it is absolutely hysterical. So then I go to my first roofing class and I went to SEO. So it's all on website stuff.
And this is so funny.
This is hilarious. So this guy in the sitting right behind me, I'm like I took four pages of notes. I'm like furiously scribbling everything. Guy sitting behind me goes, man, I just don't get this stuff. So I turn, I go, what market are you in? And he goes, oh, I serve the Austin area. And I'm like, okay, so he's not a competitor. I'm willing to help you if well, I'm not going to help this guy outcompete me.
Oh my gosh. What you don't know about St. Paul is that he wasn't just a tent maker, but he was a billionaire.
No, so I look at the guy and I just say, hey, I could send you an email of like some YouTube videos or something that maybe help explain some of this stuff a little bit better. And he's like, cool. He's like, so, and I was like, I used to live in Austin. So where in Austin? And he goes, you lived in Austin. Where'd you live? And I said, oh, Bee Cave Road and 360. And he goes, oh, okay. Okay. What roofing company were you with? And then this is the point. This is where I got to make a decision. And I go, oh no, I wasn't with a roofing company. I was with St. John Newman in Austin, Texas, Catholic church. And he goes, Catholic? I'm Catholic. And I go, okay, cool. And he goes, no, like I'm super Catholic. Like I love,
awesome.
He's like, so he just starts rattling off things. And I go, yeah, I'm part of the ordinary. And he goes, oh, Our Lady of the Atonement. I love Our Lady of the Atonement. Beautiful
oh
parish.
My gosh. That's
yes.
So
and
funny.
Then, so he's like, do you know Jonathan Weiss?
And I was like, are you serious?
You mean the guy that I hung out with for a week at Seek who works for Ascension Press? I may know that guy. And so yeah. We just have this great conversation. And
yeah.
Then we met up after, like every Roman Catholic. I felt like I hung out with and stuff like that. It was awesome. Huh. It was awesome. It confirmed me in my tent makerness.
Well, not me. I'm still just trying to etch out a living in the world of speaking.
Could you imagine if St. Paul was like a slightly shady tent make salesman? Like, what can I do to get you in a nice canvas tent today?
They're like, we want to hear the good news. He's like, we'll talk about that later. Let's talk about where you're going to stay tonight.
I got some good news for you. How about these always low prices?
Oh man, I wonder if we think we're so much funnier than the people who are going to listen. But
people are like, hey, get on to the theology.
So I would say not only would the next few episodes, maybe, I don't know, maybe even three or four episodes, who knows, be kind of the goal or the like the pinnacle of what we're talking about in Mississauga, but life, right? I mean, like this is, I can never find this quote, but I think it was might have been from like Lumen Orientalis or something like that, where Pope John Paul talks about how everything was created in light of the Eucharist, right? Mm-hmm. Like that is the single thing that we should see. It's the sun that we should see the world in, right? And it's like one of those things that it's a total reorientation of your life that you realize. You go through these steps, right? Where Mass is kind of like this weird obligation and something you don't really understand, to starting to understand it, then to start to understand it as a person, right? Like this personal relationship, and then to understand it as like the personal relationship, right? That the single most important act that you'll have this side of the grave. And then you see the entire world through a lens, a Eucharistic lens. And I think like that's the transformation we have to start to realize, is that like every bit of our life is geared towards that moment of encounter with the living God in the Holy Eucharist. And so over the next few episodes, we're going to be talking about the mystery of the Eucharist. And, and I think right now, I'm happy that the bishops have responded, and called for this Eucharistic revival, but I'm also not happy that there is a Eucharistic crisis, right? That there are many, many people who don't believe, who don't go to Mass, who don't experience this encounter. And I kind of want to get into that today a little bit.
Yeah, that's awesome. There's a great line from JP2. He says, "The Eucharist is always in some way celebrated on the altar of the world. It unites heaven and earth. It embraces and permeates all creation." I love that. The cosmic significance of the Eucharist. That's what we want to... that's elements that the church fathers would highlight, especially with the word logos, which is the structure of the whole universe, right? Is Christ. The logos became flesh and dwelt among us in Bethlehem, on our altar, and in our tabernacle. And so looking at the Eucharist from multiple dimensions is a key way to help people enter into the mystery of the Holy Sacrament.
Yeah. Gomer, so there was that one survey that came out where like belief in the true presence of the Eucharist was very low. Another survey came out that said it was higher, right? I mean, I don't know what was going on here. Either way, it's not in a good situation. Most places, I think on average, you're talking about 22% of Catholics on the books of a parish are attending Mass on Sundays. And I think I'm pretty sure that the level for attendance is pretty low. I think it's two Sundays out of the month,
right,
is what counts for that. You have massive, what I would say probably, unfortunately, sacrilegious communion. If you just do the math, right, of people who are going to confessions versus people who are receiving communion, right, you're having all these problems. So there is a Eucharistic crisis. And obviously, in a podcast of three episodes, you could spend a year writing a thesis about this. But let's talk a little bit about, what do you think the origins here are of this?
Of the lack of faith in the Eucharist? I would say there are three main reasons off the top of my head. So I came up with three. So number one,
that's amazing that you just were like, off the top of my head, let me give you three main reasons.
let me give you eight. Seems like this is going to be a listicle. The eight reasons why the Eucharist is no longer believed in. And number seven will shock you. this is why I think. Number one, terrible liturgies. Number one is terrible liturgies. I truly, truly, truly believe, like, good Catholics who already have strong sacramental catechesis will say, you know what, at least, even though that was a terrible Mass, at least the Eucharist, Jesus, is still valid. I still receive Jesus. The gospel was still there. But one of the things is, for people who don't fully understand that, the Eucharistic liturgy is the greatest liturgical catechesis. And so when that's terrible, you are telling, when we violate the red and the black of the liturgy, we are lying about our catechesis. I really do believe that. Yeah. Next is a loss of the distinction between the sacred and the profane in general in society has led us to a level of informalism and anti-solemnity that we almost are resentful of sacred things. Like, oh, Sunday is different. Sunday is set apart. I wear nice clothes. I prepare my mind as well as my body. I like the wearing of nice clothes is just it's like a sacramental, right? It's an outward sign of the disposition of my heart, right?
Of course.
And it's like, I'm putting effort. This is my first fruits for the day, all that stuff. And when you desacramentalize society and you deformalize it, I think that you make the Eucharist so familiar that it just feels like a nice add-on, a cozy blanket, and then when, I would say lastly, it is terrible catechesis. People do not understand the relationship between the old and the new and how the Eucharist fulfills the old. They do not understand how Jesus Christ is the Lord of heaven and earth. They do not understand the hypostatic union. And with all of these things, the bread to them remains bread. And so why would someone die for this thing? And even though in the early church, one of my favorite saints, Saint Tarsicius, was an altar server taking the Eucharist in a wicker basket to inmates, Christian prisoners, and was beaten to death because he refused to show the sacred species. And you have these like stories and you're like, yeah, this is the zeal that they had. Who would have that today? Who would have that today?
Yeah. Well, I mean, there are beautiful stories of people who have it, but yeah, but no, I,
well, me and you totally, and like our listeners, obviously people who listen to the Council of Trent supporters. Podcast, none of them. No, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding.
I'm with you. I think all those were good reasons. I think the devil has a way of like bringing like a, almost like a symphonic crescendo of problems together.
Yeah.
Like, he's so intelligent. Right. And so you have like this crisis in the church that you mentioned, combined with a just a massive rejection of metaphysical reality and a glorification of the scientific world and the scientific method, right? Yeah. Over metaphysics. So making a jump from, I think for modern man to make a jump from that looks like bread and wine, but it is actually the body, blood, soul, and divinity of Jesus Christ is a bridge too far for most people at this point. And so,
yeah, like, see, I mean, our episodes, our series on the reciprocity, right, the faith of the sacraments and sacramental economy. That's it right there.
Yeah. I think like if you, for instance, are having to argue with a young kid that there's such a thing as a soul, right.
Yeah.
You're like, then to try to say like that, I'm going to bring you to Mass on Sunday and that's Jesus. And then, like you said, and kind of that crescendo is then you take them to Mass and it doesn't reflect that that is the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords. That's a massive, major crisis. So yeah, I mean, I think that this is, we're in a tough spot here. And I think the bishops were right to consider this time to be a time of Eucharistic revival. Like if there's one thing we need. Now, what the response will be to that, who knows, like if they'll respond correctly. But at the same time, at least we're focusing on it right now.
Yeah. Let me offer two more points on the Eucharistic revival. So, number one, as a parish employee, which I used to be, now I'm a tent maker, as it were, in the roofing industry. and I still work for that man as you and do all the traveling talks. Please hire me. one of the things that I noted or that I did was the moment this thing happened, I can't believe it's already been like 3 years. The moment Bishop Cousins, I think, announced the Eucharistic revival and like the ideas around it, I used that and all of my talks, all of my events, everything, I used it as an excuse to hammer home the Eucharist, the real presence, the holy sacrifice of the Mass, the distinction between the sacred and the profane, all of that stuff. By doing that, my hope was to, well, one, buck the trend here, but also to get people to see the Eucharist in their daily life, not just this thing I do on Sunday. And then on top of that, I would say and I was just in charge of catechesis, right? Evangelization, catechesis, sacramental preparation. So I had kids retrained after COVID how to receive Holy Communion. We trained them how to receive on the tongue because no one knew how to receive on the tongue. We were having Satanists target our church and stealing the Eucharist. So we were trying to dissuade people from receiving in the hand, not really dissuade them, but, you know, like emphasize the tongue as the original and normative way, even though the U.S. bishops kind of went the other direction. It's still normative. So that idea, like most kids had never even, there's a little defensiveness there. Most kids had never even received it that way. They've never been taught. So when they're coming forward with dirty hands, they didn't know.
Right.
And I had scores of high school students and parents say, thank you for showing me how to do this. I didn't even know.
Yeah.
So there's that. But then here's the other side of it. This is the dark side, which is if it is just catechetical, which again, that's where I'm at home in, right? I'm not a priest. I'm not a deacon. It's not going to be enough and it's epically going to fail. If all we do is talk about the Eucharist and we don't repristinate both our hearts and the celebration of the Holy Mass, it'll still continue to be the same thing.
You're talking about like a liturgical renewal.
Yeah. Of how we participate and how they celebrate.
Yeah. I mean, I think that that's like, I feel as though I spent, and again, I'm not talking about the level that Gomer's talking about at all, but I feel like I spent so much of my parish career trying to clear up like liturgical issues, like just catechetically, right? Like that, like what do you do? How, even like what you just said, how to receive communion. right? It that people do not realize how far that would go just to do that at your parish, right? Like just to say, hey, after Mass, we're going to have a real quick, like just a 2-minute catechesis on how to receive communion because, you know, it's just good to remind ourselves and not get sloppy, blah, blah, blah. People have no idea how far that would go. I mean, it's unbelievable how that would, the impact that that would make on a parish. And I feel like a lot of my career was spent clearing up those kinds of things.
Right.
Not that it's over. I mean, I need to have a job, but I think for the last, you know, several, for the last 15 years or so, it's been all centered around like, look, it's crisis centered, unfortunately, yeah. Right? Like there's a problem here and we're trying to respond to it.
Yeah. So the steps going forward for me is I like with my own kids, like how do I as a father and a tent maker, just kidding.
This is going to get old quick. Guys,
it already is. When I said that, I was like, really? I brought it up again. No. How do I as a father try to do this? Number one is I try to get my kids to love liturgical prayer. And I don't know about you, but I hated liturgical prayer. I hated liturgy of the hours. All the things.
I do not like to pray with other people at all.
Other people are terrible. How are you Catholic? And no, I'm just kidding. But one of the things that I do is I try to break down the prayers. So like you can see behind me, Dave, I got these three things hanging up on the wall. These are the three prayers from the Anglican tradition that are imported into the ordinary Mass. But they're beautiful prayers. Like the prayer of humble access is a beautiful prayer. And so what I tried to do when, again, I did a youth ministry event for the Ordinary in Texas, and we have these three weird prayers that no one else prays except for a bunch of Protestants and now the Ordinary. So I went through the prayers, and this is part of my catechesis, is I want to teach the prayers that you say somewhat mindlessly at Mass, I want to break them down so that when they hear certain words, people think, oh, I remember when they were talking about that.
Yeah.
Oh, that's what this means. But the cool thing about that is you're bringing you're bringing intentionality into the prayer.
Yeah.
Okay. So the other side of it is realizing like, okay, so one of my favorite things in a Latin Mass, right, is when they do all the prayers at the beginning where they're quoting the Psalms. And again, I haven't been to Latin Mass in like 25 years and I went a couple weeks ago and I was like, oh, and I went to the High Mass and I'm like, oh man, I forgot about all this stuff. Like, the introibo ad altari dei, I will go before the altar of God, and like all these beautiful things. So much of it is the Psalms. And once you understand the worship of ancient Israel centered around the Psalms in the temple, that the Psalms is the top three books that Jesus quotes the most. I think it's Deuteronomy, Psalms, and Exodus. When you have these things, like you realize like this formed the religious consciousness of Israel and the early church and the monastic movement and the liturgical movements. Why shouldn't I have a healthier, loving view of this stuff? So when we talk about the Eucharist and we talk about the sacraments and we talk about mystery, we're talking about a whole mode of communing with God. So that's why repristinating, making pristine again, the liturgy, and not just the liturgy in terms of, oh, it's got to be this and that, but like in my heart, in my mind.
Of course.
When I approach when I'm holding a prayer book in my hand, that has a liturgical text. What does that mean? What am I praying? Not just rote memorization.
Yeah, I like what you're saying. And I think that clearly that's what needs to happen. I mean, like, look, liturgical reform is above our pay grade. Right? Yeah. But there's plenty that, like you said, that we can do to like bring sacredness, right? The sacred aspect back to Mass. And I think that that's like really important. So here's a question. When you are approaching the Eucharist with regards to RCIA, because for me, you know, the things that you just mentioned, right? Like all of these like come out in a monastic rhythm, right? Yeah. Like you get good at going to Mass. Like it's not something that just you learn something and then all of a sudden tomorrow it's perfect, right? Like you get better at things. And so like the way to teach kids how to go to Mass is to go to Mass, right? Like over and over and over again, right? Like a lot. They should get very comfortable with it and then maybe a little too comfortable. And then all of a sudden, like they should engage it, right? Like they should wrestle with it a little bit. And I think like with RCIA, it's hard because you know, they're not your kids. So how do you communicate? Okay. Cause like here's the issue. I'm beating around the bush here. You're dropping a person into 2024 Catholicism in the midst of a Eucharistic crisis. Yeah. So how do you combat it?
Oh man. Man, what an exciting time to be alive, right? What an exciting time to be alive.
That's the way we're going to interpret this.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. So number one, whenever I do any sacramental catechesis, I've said this a million times on this show, but for those of you who are new, welcome. Every sacramental catechesis that I do is thoroughly charismatic. So if people are in RCIA, I am laboring to make sure they understand the person and mission of Jesus Christ. Who is he? Who is your daddy and what does he do? Right? Like that was my Arnold Schwarzenegger impression.
Wow, that was terrible.
I know. Okay. Oh man, now I'm sad. So laboring to hammer home who Christ is and his saving mission, which means gospel work. So I make it a requirement to read the Gospel of Mark two or three times during the RCIA process. So they're constantly getting in touch with the words and deeds of Jesus. Then on top of that, when I do the sacramental catechesis, it's the Paschal mystery. Right. So all seven sacraments communicate and are fueled by the Paschal mystery. It's the engine that powers the sacraments, the life, death, resurrection, and ascension of Jesus. So it's like, this is a saving mission. This is who he is. This is the Paschal mystery and why it is central to the sacraments and to life. And then when I get to the Eucharist, when you hit John 6, when you hit 1 Corinthians chapter 10, where he references the Exodus stuff, when you hit these things, they're sounding familiar notes. The other thing I would say, I followed Augustine's advice on, or I don't know if it's advice, but his program on catechesis, which is start with salvation history.
Right.
So they've already heard Genesis. They've heard Exodus. They know the feasts of Israel. They know these things to, you know, different degrees. It's not like they're all like rabbinic scholars here, but let me not oversell it. So that when we get to the Eucharist, when we talk about the bread of life discourse, it's like the bread that came down from heaven. What is that? Your fathers ate this bread in the wilderness, yet they still died. What is that reference? So when they start to grasp how the old and the new are, the new is referencing the old, then they're like, they bring more understanding. So it kind of takes away that apathy, right? They're not just overcoming ignorance. They're like, oh, wow. Oh, this was deliberately by Jesus. And you show them how he's the new Moses. So if he's the new Moses, then what's the new Passover for Christians? Well, yes, it's his death and resurrection. But it's also the Passover meal, right, which is, you know, and St. Paul explicitly says, Christ our Passover has been sacrificed for us, therefore let us keep the feast. And this feast is what the Holy Mass is. So lastly, I would say there's two elements that I always try to drive home with the Eucharist in RCIA. One is how the celebration of the Holy Mass ties to the sacrifice of the cross, right? So Paschal mystery stuff. Yeah. And then the other is how it ties to the heavenly liturgy. Book of Hebrews, Book of Revelation, right, stuff. And by helping them see these twin arms, and in all catechesis throughout the church, the Eucharist was not about, like, it's a fraternal sharing, and it's like, yeah, that's all, like, tertiary. Principally, it's a participation in the death and resurrection of Jesus and in the heavenly liturgy that we all will participate in at the end of time. And if they can get those two things, then I feel like the rest of it, like arguing over transubstantiation, real presence, the moment of consecration, Eucharistic prayer, like reading through it, all those stuff just kind of falls into place.
Okay, so you saying that just brings up just one question, and I'm very interested in this, and that is, and I think this could be a slippery slope for DREs, okay? You've mentioned throughout this episode several times, like liturgical issues, okay? Yeah. Yeah. So someone who's coming into RCIA, do you address it at all? Like,
Do
you address the liturgical crisis at all?
Yeah,
that's dangerous, right? Because
there are some
people who are going to obsess about this and who are literally going to put every single problem of the church in that basket, which is the slope that you're headed down. But we'll give it a year or so. But yeah, so how do you address it, and what do you do, I guess?
So the way I address it is actually through the reciprocity of faith in the sacraments, because that's what we're building, right? St. Thomas Aquinas said that the sacraments do not give you sincerity. You bring sincerity to the sacraments.
Right.
Right. So I reiterate that a million times. If you do not know that which you're about to receive, do not receive it. Right. If you don't understand anything about baptism or confirmation, like, or confession or whatever sacrament we're preparing you for as a Protestant becoming Catholic or as a neophyte, you need to understand it. And this isn't like, I'm not interested in giving holy things to dogs, right? Casting my pearl before swine kind of thing. And I tried to make the distinction so hard for them that the way we worship God in the liturgy is by obedience to God's command. It doesn't look like us. It looks like what he wants. When we give God our commands and tell him, well, I'd rather do it this way, or that really doesn't gel with me, or whatever. So I treat it in three different ways. One is, this is not religious entertainment. Number two is, your prayer life is deeper than your emotional life. And number three is, God is the one who sets the terms for our worship of God. And then when I talk about the liturgical problems,
yeah,
it's okay. Always within those things.
Okay, all right.
So number one is, if you're coming to a mass and the goofballs in the choir, in the musicians are trying to turn it into something entertaining, you are going to something that'll always harm the liturgical expression of the mass. So okay. If people are rocking out, if people are folksing, crying, if people are doing guitar solos, that is wrong. Because it is not tied to the sacred history of how the church has always viewed art. There's secular art and there's sacred art. And there is a fundamental difference.
You get into this in RCA? Do you bring this up all the time?
Because okay. Here's the deal. They ask. They're like, hey, how come I saw this YouTube video. Look, this is the deal.
Okay.
They're Googling this stuff.
So they're pulling you into it.
They're on YouTube. Yeah. I never shy away from questions. Well, I heard that
but I feel like the real story is that they're like, you're like, does anybody have any questions possibly about liturgical catechesis in the last 30 years?
No. Because I know it's such a minefield for people, because I also know that there are jerks who want to make everything a liturgical battle. And they're like blame everything that's happened wrong in the church on the liturgy, you know, and these are people who are profoundly ignorant of history and how the Roman Missal came to be and other things like that. But my thing is like, I'm not talking like Latin Mass versus the Novus Ordo Mass,
I know you're not.
But people will filter it that way. And that's the thing is like, what does reverence mean in the history of the Roman Catholic Church? Do more of that, because reverence will often draw you into the symbolism, the reconstituting of the sacred symbols, the signs, like incense. Oh, we don't do incense at this church. Why? It is filled throughout the book of Revelation. It is filled through. I was just doing Father Mike's Bible in a Year today with my wife this morning before we recorded, which is why I sent you that text to ask for 5 more minutes. and it was all Exodus and Leviticus. The chapters we were studying was about like the altar of incense. This stuff is important, but not to modern people. What the heck is a little bit of smoke that makes me cough? And it's like, no. So these are the things that I'm talking about. These elements, not just of traditionalism, but these elements communicate. Symbols have cognitive as well as performative signs. They tell you something more and they get you to do something else, right? And when we deny, diminish, or we just don't understand them,
right,
then it falls on deaf ears. So part of cultivating an authentically Catholic mystagogia is encountering these symbols and what the hidden communication means with them.
Okay, I love it. I think that's a very healthy way to address it within RCIA or within evangelizing relationship. I probably don't connect the dots as well as you do, but I always add in a class like the history of the church of the modern church, because I do want to present that they don't know what normal is, right?
Yeah.
That we're not really living in Christendom anymore.
Yeah, this is not normal times.
Yeah, this is not normal time.
Well, here's a perfect example. A guy came up to me, Protestant, really well-formed, wants to become Catholic. He's in my inclusion class. He comes up to me, and one of the first things out of his mouth in the second class, maybe even the first, was, hey, I was watching a ton of YouTube videos, because they're excited to be confirmed.
Yeah, of course,
so they're watching these videos. Hey, what about the Eucharist? What about this? And they're like, and I saw this guy called Taylor Marshall.
Yeah.
And he was saying some things that were pretty upsetting to me about like the state of the church today. He goes, what do you think? And I just put my hand out like this, and I go, I'm going to stop you right there. I said, there are many things I agree with that guy. There are many things that I disagree with that guy. But you do not have the intellectual resources to
of course,
throw away the bad and hold fast to what is good. You don't have that. So what I'm going to tell you to do is stay at the level of catechesis and scripture and don't go beyond it. Don't go beyond the people who are muckraking and ready to take sides and us versus theming. I was like, maybe one day you will have to do that. You will have to learn about the yeah. polemics going on in the church and all this stuff. I said, but right now, I need you reading the catechism and listening to catechetical presentations more than you need to be worrying about what hot take headline is going on in the life of the church and what is Pope Francis doing now and what does Taylor Marshall think about that. And he came up, this is a year ago, I went out with a couple guys for beers and he drove in from Dallas and we sat down, we started talking about it. He goes, Mike, I have to tell you, you gave me the best advice ever. And I said, what's that?
I think that is, that's wise advice.
Yeah. Yeah. And he's like, I stayed away from this. And he goes, now I feel like, he's like, I've probably read about 200 books since then, you know, all this stuff. And he's like, now I feel like I have the resources to judge, to weigh, to understand, to discern. I'm like, right. Right.
Yeah. I think that that is, I mean, I'm off topic here, but like, I think that piece of advice is so important because there are no non-watermelons today. Like everyone, you gotta spit out the seeds. You know what I mean? Like, so you better be very well grounded in catechesis and what, you know, the important part of the faith. I mean, not that there are unimportant parts, but the dogma, the doctrine, the great tradition of our faith is before you start, like, you know, getting into some of the more, I wouldn't say fringe, but the controversy, right? You can't wade into a controversy.
Okay? Yeah, you have to have your basics. You have to have the 101s and the 201s before you can go into the 301s and the 401s, before you can start, you know, these are master's level discussions of theological import that most people aren't prepared to engage in. And yet they have opinions, man. You're like, okay.
Yeah, me too. I'm guilty too. We should take a break.
Yeah, we should take a break. And when we come back, I want to talk about a couple elements of the Eucharist as the rites of initiation, right? Yeah. So looking at the Eucharist, not just from like everyone's daily communion, but what does the church do for those Catholics, those people becoming Catholic when they receive communion at Easter Vigil? We'll be right back from, you're going to hear a great word from Ascension Press. They are the sponsors of this show. Reminder to text EKSB to 33777 to get all of Dave's hot takes on liturgical issues. Just kidding. You can subscribe to our email. This way we will not spam you. We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Jeff Cavins, and I'm excited to introduce you to the Ascension app. It contains the full text of the Great Adventure Bible, the full text of the Catechism of the Catholic Church, and both the Bible and Catechism in a Year podcasts. The app has special features that make the connections between the Bible and the Catechism crystal clear, like color-coded crosslinks and easy navigation. It also answers nearly 1,000 questions from Bible in a Year listeners about the Bible with videos from myself and others, also audio clips and excerpts from Ascension's popular books. To download the app, simply go to the App Store on your phone and search Ascension. I hope you enjoy it. I enjoy it, carry it around everywhere I go.
All right, and we're back. That was a great message. So happy, so fun. I love Ascension Press. I love it when in episode 328, Father Mike Schmitz references me, quotes me Miriam.
Here we go.
And she goes, oh, I love Gomer. And then they give a great quote, which is, as Catholics, we were never really taught how to pray, only how to repeat. Lives were changed. Souls were saved. Text messages were sent. I always know where people are in the catechism in a year when it hit day 328. And then my wife's like, hey, he just mentioned you. And then like 3 days later, I get another text message. 1 week later, I get another text and they all start trickling in.
If these people really cared about your soul, they would not bring you up publicly like that. It's just.
Yeah, but they don't. No. So this is the thing I wanted to talk about. So when you look at the Eucharist, and we can wrap the show up on this one. When you look at the Eucharist, we can see that there are three principal parts of the liturgy of the Eucharist. There's the preparation, also known as the offertory. There's the Eucharistic sacrifice, which is the great prayer of thanksgiving. And then there's the distribution of Holy Communion. And then after everyone receives Holy Communion, isn't it funny that we go right into the concluding rites and you're sent outside? I used to always think, like, shouldn't the Eucharist be like in the middle somewhere? You know,
right.
No, it's the thing that we are given. It is the, in a certain sense, it's viaticum. It's bread for the journey, right? So when you think about these things, preparation, the Eucharistic sacrifice and thanksgiving, and then the distribution, that frames the liturgical movement of the Eucharist. But there were always these two main elements in the rite of initiation. So you're at Easter Vigil. And what happens first is they're baptized and they're clothed with the white garment. Then they get confirmed. And generally speaking, when they're doing this, they're processing towards the altar in their white garments, holding these candles. And then the question becomes, what does that represent? And that represents the side of the liturgy that I, the reason why I've fallen in love with the liturgy lately, is the heavenly side of it.
Right.
Right. This is meant to be the heavenly side of the banquet that we are receiving in the Lord. This is the messianic banquet. And as they're processing, right, their white robe, the deacons are setting the altar. The deacons represent angels. The altar is the body of Christ, right? And it represents all of these things. And for the early church, this was so absolutely important. And there's a great line from Jean-Cardinal Danielou, who was one of the Nouvelle Théologie guys. He said, in Gregory of Nazianzen, in his vision, the Paschal night of Easter Vigil, baptism, confirmation, communion, opens into eternity.
Yeah.
Right. So as you're processing down, he's telling you what this means. And he's like, here you come as those who are washed in the blood of the Lamb in your white robes. You are victorious. And you are now this great army of the Lamb of God. And you're processing forward. And they're singing the hymn, the psalm, I will go into the altar of God. Right. And it's all of these things. And the sacramental worldview. And the heavenly worldview, like Christ sits at the right hand of the Father and he never ceases offering intercession for us. And the principal way he does that is through the Holy Mass, right?
I love it. And for those who are like, you know, in the trenches, just a quick little vignette of like how this, you know, can just change someone's perspective completely. A friend of mine who's just complete curmudgeon, I drag this guy kicking and screaming into a life of discipleship, basically. And a priest who is part of our diocese but has been out for a long time came back, and he's using all this incense, tons and tons of incense. And it's got to be so much that it's like actually created a budgetary issue that they use this much incense. Isn't this funny?
That's awesome.
I mean, not a real issue, obviously, but it's like people are like, boy, that's a lot of money on incense that we're spending, you know, compared to what we did in the past. And this, you know, my friend who's kind of a curmudgeon, you know, was complaining about it. And I said, well, you know, you're literally supposed to see a fog because it's supposed to represent, right? Like the fact that, yeah, the cloud, right? And that it's like, that's heavenly over there, right? Like there should be like a little bit, almost create like a distance there. And before I could even finish, he was like, that's it. That's all I need to know. I'm fine. Okay. You don't need to keep explaining. Like that's enough. And honestly, like there are so many hundreds of things in the Mass that's enough. Like just that one little explanation.
Yeah.
Hey, this, I'm excited to talk about this, to get into the mystery of the Eucharist over the next few episodes. Like we're going to get into the theology and everything. It's going to be really great.
Yeah. I'm excited. And for those who get uncomfortable with the liturgical stuff, I think going forward, it's going to be a little bit less, you know, liturgy stuff, but I would just encourage everyone. I'm doing a new podcast with Professor Chris Karstens on the liturgy. And it's called, I'm going to make the announcement now. It's called the Becoming God podcast. And it grounds.
Sounds so Hindu. I don't like it. I reject it in the name of Jesus.
Grounds everything in the theosis, deification, divinization, which has been a central teaching in the Catholic Church forever.
Sounds Hindu.
We actually have to spend four episodes defending the notion of it, right? So it's grounding sacramental life in the ultimate purpose and plan of God, which is for us to be totally united to him forever. And so, but the idea of this, like if you want to go into liturgy, that's a place. But what we try to do is to say this, the second part of the catechism on the sacraments, section one, that's where you want to live. The section two is where you go through all seven sacraments, but section one is where it talks about the liturgy and the sacraments in this beautiful way. And I would encourage everyone to just read through that section. Literally, go to Mass one Sunday, stay after, if the noise volume will allow you, and just crack the catechism and read through it.
Yeah.
At just that part. Part two, section one. Go.
Fantastic. And I just have a quick prayer request for everybody out there. There's a family here that I know. I don't know them, but I'm connected to them through someone else. And similar situation that what my family went to. The mom she's at her last stages here. She has the same exact cancer as Amber did. And she's three little ones at home and just in a lot of pain, which is, I mean, it's almost eerily similar to what Amber was going through and is dealing with all those things like leaving children behind and a husband behind. Yeah. So I'd ask you to just, if you have a minute, please pray for them. It's not lost on me that we had such a network of prayer warriors. And so not everyone has that. So say a prayer and pray for us. God bless you all. Bye.